Welcome to the Bristol Festival of Economics. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and I'm just come from a session on inequality and why it matters, which was chaired by Julia Unwin, Chief Executive of the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. Julia's also of a new book just launched at the festival called Why Fight Poverty, published by the London Publishing Partnership in their new Perspectives series. Julia, why don't you start off by giving us a flavour of the conversation at this session we've just been in?
Well, we had a fantastic panel. We had three economists and Polly Toynbee from The Guardian. And I think what we were talking about was the way in which society is changing, the growing gap between the rich and the poor, and I would say between the very poor and the not so poor, and what that's doing to our social contract. So we talked about the changes to wages. We talked about the difference between young and old, men and women, and some very profound questions about where power sits, who makes decisions, and in whose interest does this growing amount of inequality take place.
And can you give us just a bit more of a flavour of what we've seen over, say, the last 40 or 50 years in terms of patterns of poverty and inequality in the UK?
Well, we at the Joseph Rowntree Foundation report every year at the beginning of December on what's happening to poverty and social exclusion. And over the last few years, since the worst economic crisis that's happened in any of our lifetimes, we have been reporting a very, very poor picture for people and places in poverty. But it's not the one people expected. It used to be possible to think, if you're not working, you'll be poor. That picture has completely changed. The modern face of poverty is of people doing poorly paid, insecure, short-term, part-time jobs. They are still poor, they are still very, very poor, and at all ages they are still struggling to make ends meet in an economy where they have been told, if you work, you'll be okay. And that's why I talk about the social contract, because that seems to me to break the social contract. The notion that if you do what the government says, go to work, apply for the jobs and do them, whatever your skills base, you will then have a life in which you'll be able to feed your family and raise your children. Now, why does it matter? It matters because members of the panel are pointing out time and again, the gap between the attainment of the richest and the poorest is set at 18 months. As soon as a child goes to school, teachers and nursery workers can tell you how that child will do. And it's not about their abilities, it's about their background wealth. It's about the income in that household. In our modern society, that's too much of a waste. We cannot afford for those young people not to be able to contribute to our society. We can't take the risk that they are just wasted. And frankly, we can't afford it as a society because our benefits bill goes up when we have to subsidise people who are not able to earn enough.
What do we know about the long-term drivers of the rise in inequality that we've seen, certainly in the UK and the United States over recent decades? We talked at the session about education, we talked about technology. What's your perspective on those fundamental drivers?
Well, we were always told that globalisation would increase inequality, and it clearly has in those countries, but interestingly, not in all countries. It is those two countries where it is most stark. And there is a concentration of wealth at the very top and a concentration of poverty at the bottom. And in the UK particularly, a very dramatic decline in living standards across all levels. Now, the reason this matters is that we've all had to tighten our belts. But if you haven't got very much money, if you are at the bottom level of the income distribution, the things you will spend your money on are the things that have gone up most. So food's gone up, fuel and energy's gone up, transport's gone up, childcare's gone up. Those are the things that poorer families spend a large proportion of their money on. And so, therefore, they are really struggling. Having a cost of living struggle, which is affecting everybody, we know we're about to face a cost of living election. But unless we get this right, a return to growth will leave some people in desperate poverty.
Your book is called Why Fight Poverty? Is it a question that we need to ask, or is it something that people should automatically assume is a good idea?
It's called Why Fight Poverty, and its working subtitle is Why Is It So Hard? And the reason I wrote it is because we have made such enormous strides in society in the last 30 years. We have improved things so much, and yet we carry on being worried about poverty. And what I describe in the book is the sort of political standoff we have, with some people saying it's all about structural economics, unless we change everything, people continue to be poor. And others, more on the right of the political spectrum, saying it's all to do with individuals making bad choices. And actually, of course we know it's a mixture of the two. Because we are scared of poverty, because people who are poor are deeply ashamed, it is the social problem we fail to grapple with. So we've grappled with so many things. Children now leave school more or less able to read and write. 100 years ago, that wasn't the case. People survive hideous diseases. 100 years ago, that wasn't the case. But our story about poverty continues as a national disgrace, that we're wasting people's lives because they don't have enough to live on.
So it's one of the remaining giants, in a way.
It's the giant that we thought we could vanquish, and my book challenges us to really think seriously about how we can, because we are still a relatively wealthy country with a lot of wealth in it. We have the capacity to do it, and it's not just a job for government, it's not just a job for local government, it's a job for all of us to recognise that there is a huge waste in keeping the numbers of people we now have locked in poverty.
We've answered the question, why fight poverty now? How do we?
Well, people need to get into work, but the work needs to be the sort that they can do. There is no point dragooning people into work, which means they're neglecting their children or unable to care. They need to be able to afford to live, so we need enough housing at a level which people can afford to live in. And currently, relatively wealthy people are having to claim state benefits in order to pay their rent. That seems to me to be a disgraceful position to be in. And we need to address what happens in localities where poverty feels locked in. Because we no longer have central command of our industry, and we won't again, we're in a globalised world, we then need to answer some tough questions about what is the offer for people who live in places like Hull and Hartlepool, where there are very few jobs. So there isn't a silver bullet. If there were one, we'd have fired it and won. But there are a number of things which, if we can stick to it, and show sustained long-term determination, we can bring those numbers down and release those talents.
Final question, Julia. How do you think about poverty in terms of the global context of poverty? Britain is a relatively rich country, a very rich country. There are many other countries around the world which are much poorer on average and with very, very poor people in them. How do we compare those two kinds of poverty in a way?
Poverty is always relative, always, as is wealth. People talk about relativity over time and across the world. And of course, over time, my grandparents would not have imagined, as would yours, the wealth with which we live, and we're middle-income people. They would not have imagined what it could be like to be wealthy, just as poor people would look at the poor people now and think, gosh, they're doing very well. And exactly the same thing happens across the world. Of course it's relative. Of course somebody living in this country is not poor in the same way that somebody living in an African village with no running water is poor. Of course they're not. Poverty is relative to what your society provides and expects. And if we take an absolutist route, we're forgetting the real loss and real damage of poverty in our own time.
Julia Ullman, thank you very much.